At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hello, my name's Donna Fraser and I would love to tell you about Give Me Five, which is a Her Spirit initiative to get more women running and walking over the coming months. We passionately believe that every woman can enjoy running. Give Me Five is holistic and isn't all about pounding the pavements and is designed to help you run more easily from breathing to posture, building strength and developing overall fitness. I will also be supported by the Her Spirit coaching team, who will take you week by week for 8 weeks on a small steps journey to a fun 5 kilometre walk or run. And I'm so excited to be supported by Claire Danson and Caroline Martin. Just go to www.herspirit.co.uk and click on our programmes for more information on how to sign up and join me.
Hello and welcome to our Her Spirit podcast with me, Annie Emerson, and my gorgeous friend, Louise Minchin. Louise, how are you? And tell me, where are you and what tier are you in at the moment?
I was just thinking, I think I will speak to our guest in a minute, but I think we're covering all the tiers today. And this has very much been, hasn't it, Annie, a lockdown. Well, we're kind of in mini different lockdowns at the moment podcast, because when we started, it was like 1 week before. I don't know why I'm laughing. I think it's the hysteria that's finally got to me. Should we talk to our guest? I'm really excited about talking to her. I have met her, but you know her really well.
Well, I do know her well, and my twin sister knows her really well. So, it's really exciting today. And I think not least because we have an amazing guest, and this is our 30th Her Spirit podcast. So what a guest we have to celebrate that. She has won the What's on Stage Award for Outstanding Contribution to British Theatre, which was amazing. She got that at the age of just 44. A lot of our listeners will remember her from Twinkle in Dinner Ladies, Veronica Ball in Shameless, and Martha Costello in BBC's legal drama Silk. But she has done so much work in theatre, on TV. She is the brilliant Maxine Peake.
Hi, Maxine.
Hello. Thank you for that introduction. That's amazing.
It is all about you, Maxine. And I think, you know, a little introduction perhaps to our listeners, I think, from my point of view, of where you started out in life, because you didn't have an easy road into acting. And quite extraordinarily, not one acting school would accept you in the northwest of England, but RADA did. So you can stick it to there.
Exactly.
But I mean, what an amazing achievement, you know, after that, having been turned down so many times.
Yeah, I tried for 3 years to get into any drama school. I wanted to go to Manchester Theatre School at Manchester Met because I could have stayed at home and I got a grant. But after the third year of trying, I sort of thought, I've got the message. And then myself and a friend called Diane Morgan, whatever happened to Diane Morgan, went and auditioned for RADA because they came to the Royal Exchange. So it was only £2.75 return on the train from Bolton. And then the rest is history, I think, because I was so blasé by this point.
I find that absolutely I don't really know how to say it, shocking in some ways that you couldn't get into the northern drama schools, and then RADA obviously had a completely different point of view.
Well, and I think it's, but I couldn't get into Manchester Youth Theatre either. Maybe there was just too many of me, too many slightly bubbly, chubby northerner women. Maybe there was too much of a glut. But yeah, oh, I had a terrible time getting in anywhere. I was talking to a friend about it last night. We were still in touch. We went to a college in Salford. And 2 weeks in, they said, "You're not an actress. We suggest you leave."
Oh,
but the thing is, being thick-skinned, naive, and probably a little bit daft, it's work for me.
I mean, I think there's a big argument against you being daft at all, Maxine. But and I love the way you downplay yourself. But how does an actress, and it is tough, I know that world, obviously, because of Charlotte, my twin sister. But how do you take so many rejections and keep saying, I'm going to keep doing this. This is what I want to do and I'm going to pursue it? Because it's not an easy world out there. And you could have understood, you know, if you'd have given up, but you didn't stop trying.
Because I think it's an obsession. And I always say to people, people say, oh, you must have had lots of confidence. You must have thought you were good to keep going. I said, no, it wasn't that. It's something you both know. It's what you have to do. It's what you just think, well, I have to do this. Even if people keep telling me I can't, I'm sorry, that's not going to stop me. Because I don't know what, it's not that I didn't know what else to do, but I just thought, I've got to do this. And it's even with parts, parts that I fought for or gone in and, you know, begged if I can have auditions. And people thought, because you thought you'd be the best person. I said, no, because I have to do it. It's a compulsion, not a, you know, if I was a sensible person, I would have walked away a long time ago. But there's just that desire and need to do it.
And what parts have you fought for and got?
Oh, well, Veronica in Shame. How long have you got?
A long time.
Veronica in Shameless. My gorgeous friend, I hope she won't mind me saying, Christine Bottomley, had got hold of the script of Shameless and went, oh my God, there's this part in it. Perfect for you, called Veronica. I think you'd be brilliant at it. So I rung my then agent, who rung the casting director, and they said, oh, no, Maxine's not right for this. And we'd all just been in this series called Early Doors with James McAvoy, and they said, we're not having the same load of Northern actors and the same gang of actors again. So, no. And then they kept auditioning people and nobody was sort of, you know, feeling right to them. And very last minute, I was filming Early Doors and literally down the road from the casting director's studio, and I was covered in fake tan. I was playing a character called Janice, who worked at Tantastic, and I had this moth-eaten fur coat on, terribly applied fake tan deliberately, dripping in gold. And I got a call saying, if you can get to the casting director's office this afternoon, there's an audition for you. So I blagged the lovely driver, unit driver, Wayne, and said, can you get me up there? And I shouldn't have done it, I would have been in big trouble, but I wasn't needed for a couple of hours. So he jumped in his van, drove me up there, and I did an audition.
Wow.
But yeah, I had to, and oh, when I played Myra Hindley, I mean, again, they said, oh no, you're not right. And I kept on and on and on saying, please, 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 can I have an audition?
So that was the Moors murders, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was, yeah, at See No Evil with wonderful Joe Froggatt, Sean Harris and Matthew McNulty, yeah. And there's been lots of jobs. I did one called Faith, and I went for a small part in it and then cried in the audition because I was so passionate about doing something about the miners' strike. And in the end, David Thacker, I think just because he thought I was probably going to do something to, you know, something to harm myself in some way, sort of went, okay, let's let you read for this bigger part. I mean, I'm not advising all actors to do this, but I think when you feel a passion for something, I'd always say to actors, unless, don't just do it because you think, oh, it's a bigger part. But if you think, I could really want to do this, I mean, I'd give somebody a job who wants to do something that badly. Mm. You know what I mean? I think, well, if you want it that badly.
I think you're right. There's something in the passion, isn't there? And there's something about knowing that you want to do, which is very powerful.
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy, and happy because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership, and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub, and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep, and stress every single week with your own personalized dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Yeah, I mean, whether I do, I mean, but then there was a bit of naivety of youth as well. I'm slightly more now, I go, oh, well, if they don't want me, they don't want me. I'm a little bit more laid back about it. But then, you know, it was sort of be all and end all, you know. So, yeah, but yeah, I've made a fool of myself on regular occasions to get jobs.
Let's talk about how your career changed, because I guess it's safe to say that your biggest role was Twinkle in Dinner Ladies.
In more ways than one.
with the great Victoria Wood. I think it's interesting. It's always a bit of a difficult subject to talk about, but it was Victoria, I think if I'm right, who came to you and just said, you're a blonde, chubby northerner, and if you don't do something about it, you're going to get typecast. And people have sort of said that to you before, but you'd never really done anything to change it. And you went away when you're having a break between recording and lost a lot of weight very quickly.
So, yeah, I'd been at drama school and one of the teachers said, you know, if you don't lay off the chips, you'll never play Juliet. To which part I was like, I don't want to play Juliet. It's right, rubbish part. But, you know, that's because... and then Vic said to me, you know, look, you're blonde, you're northern, you're chubby. You're playing comedy roles, you're going to get typecast. I knew this, you know, it always been in the back of my mind. But I suppose in some ways it was like a safety net going, well, I'll always get cast because it's the way I look. So I was in, there was a comfort in going, well, I, you know, might not have to push myself or stretch myself or blah, blah, blah. And Vic had said this. And then as well, at the same time, I'd gone to the doctors for something and got on the scales and then she took my blood pressure. She went, so you're 24, you're 15 stone and you've got extremely high blood pressure. And she went, I think you need to do something about it. So coupled with what Vic had said, I thought, yeah, I need to sort myself out, really, don't I? It's once somebody as well has said it's your health, that's when I went, oh, I never thought about it like that. I just thought I'm a big girl and I'll always be a big girl. So I lost the weight. Yeah, I lost.
How did you lose it? What did you do?
I did Weight Watchers initially.
Did you?
I was living in Clapham at the time and there was a Weight Watchers, I think, at the town hall. I can't remember where it was. And I just sort of went, oh, I'll give it a go. And it worked for me. You know, the weight started to drop off sort of weekly. You go and stand on the scales and then you have to be careful because you get slightly obsessed. It's more about just going in and, you know, getting, you know, and when you didn't, it was like, oh, I've not lost any weight this week, you know, and you have to sort of have a word with yourself a bit. But I did that, and 9 months I lost 5 stone, but I was 24, you know, which when you're that age, it's sort of, yeah, it's, I think, well, I don't know. It always feels easy, doesn't it, when you're younger. So I did that. And then went back to the second season of Dinner Ladies, which everybody wasn't that happy about because the character had changed, or they felt the character had changed because, and Vic had written the second storyline that this baby appears and everybody thinks it's Twinkle because she's put weight on.
And you've done the opposite.
I'd done the opposite.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, I just didn't think, and we weren't, you know, it wasn't like we'd done the first series and we were definitely doing a second. Mm-hmm. We didn't know. It was like, we might be doing a second, we might not, you know, still waiting to hear. So in the meantime, because other parts have been offered were fat this, fat that, fat Karen, fat Tracy, fat Mandy, fat, you know, and I thought, this is it, isn't it? Is this? I mean, they wouldn't do it now. I mean, there's no way I think you'd get a partner that had fat before the character. I mean, we do.
So that's what they were actually calling them?
Yeah. Yeah, fat. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm sitting here a bit speechless going, really? Did that really?
Yeah.
So we've got a question from one of our listeners, Jess, and she said, what's your relationship with food like now?
Interesting. Better, but I'm a comfort eater, definitely still a comfort eater, and I have to sort of, anyway, I go, just go with it. But it's that thing of having the discipline to go, right, you've slightly got that off your chest now, you've had a couple of days of just gorging. Now, you know, it's just been able to get hold the reins. But yeah, I still have to be careful. Lots of, do they call it unconscious eating? Well, I don't realise I've eaten. I've been stood in the kitchen and I don't realise I've just hoovered up, you know, 6 biscuits and a slice of bread. I'm thinking about what to eat for my lunch. But yeah, still, but I just watch, I'm more careful, a little more careful, but I don't let it rule me. And I think if I really want to eat something, I eat it. You know what I mean?
Is it true that you had to wear a fat suit then for the second series?
Yes. Yes, so they made me a fat suit.
Which, you think about that? What an extraordinary thing to have to do.
I know. Although there was a photographer in one day and I lifted up my tabard and my thing, and I obviously had the fat suit, so it looks like I'm completely naked. So there is a picture of me just spontaneously. But yeah, it was just quite funny because I'd have to put me this big nylon fat suit on and then put me, you know, me that sort of a bit like a house coat, aren't they? Then your tabard on and then off I'd go. But it was, I tell you what's interesting about losing the weight. Psychologically, you don't change straight away. You know, I still feel like I'm still have the mindset of being a big girl. I don't know.
But not now.
Well, I still think you carry it for, and it doesn't bother me. And sometimes I think, oh, you know, was I a bit happier when I was bigger? Because it's a good protection. It's a good armor. For me, it was. Because men, I was like, well, men are not interested because I'm big. So I didn't give them, the time of day. You know, so there was a defense mechanism to it, which made you slightly impenetrable sometimes. But then people just think, because but people say, oh, but you've got a lovely personality. but you've got a bonny face. For the things people
it
say.
It might have been just because you were 24.
But
you felt.
I know, but then I lost the weight and went, have I even got an all right personality? I don't know why I am anymore.
As if it went with it, for goodness sake.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, it was like, has everything gone now? What, you know, because you could be. I was always that. I mean, I was talking to a friend the other day and we were both, you know, saying about comfort eating. And I used to sit at the end of the dinner table at school and everyone would leave the leftovers and it was like comedy. Well, did it? And I thought, oh, God, I must have been daft as a brush. But I would sit and eat everybody's leftovers because I thought it was funny. And people would laugh and go, God, you're not going to eat all that. I go, watch me. No. I shouldn't laugh about it, but it was a... Anyway, food was... I could entertain people by my capacity for consumption, you know.
Well, luckily, you realised that you could also entertain them maybe by acting as well.
But you did do some sport.
And yeah.
We have a question that Holly, one of our listeners, has picked up on. Rugby league.
Yes.
Well, tell us about this.
Because I was quite sporty. As my mum said, used to say, you've got a short body and long legs. So I played netball. We did netball at school. We did a bit of hockey. And I really enjoyed sport. But I was quite, because I was big, I was a bit clumsy, I think. But I used to, you know, I think people would run into me. And then they'd fall over. So a teacher jokingly said, you'd be good at rugby. And then my sister used to work, she was on a YTS in a brewery, Greenhouse Brewery, doing, I think she was in accounts. And there was a guy there called, I think he was called Jed Byrne. And it was when rugby league wasn't professional. So he used to play for Wigan Rugby League. And she used to go and watch him. And she said, one day it come up on the board, women wanted for a rugby league team. And I went, right, I'll go. She said, I'll come with you. Well, she didn't turn up. So
no, so you were on your own?
So I went on my own and joined to Wigan to join Wigan Rugby League. Wigan Ladies, as people say, Wigan Ladies, isn't that? Wigan Ladies Rugby League Football Club. And I loved it. I mean, but these women on the team were amazing and they were very serious about it. And maybe I wasn't quite serious enough. You know, these were some fantastic athletes. But for about 2 or 3 years, I played rugby.
That's really impressive because I just look at it and think, gosh, I'd be absolutely terrified.
Well, once the adrenaline starts going, it's amazing how, you know, sort of slightly fearless you get. But I remember when we played Keithley and they had this amazing player. I think she was called Marcy. I think she appeared in the magazine, Open Rugby or whatever. I mean, she'd come running towards you and we'd all go, oh, God, you know, you'd literally be around her ankles and she'd still be going. So, some of the women were amazing, and it was a big thing for them. They weren't messing about, and it was proper.
Why I think I'd be terrified, because I don't imagine people are messing about if they're playing that kind of game either.
No, and our Chad, was he called? What was he called? Our trainer, he used to say women actually are more sort of, they carry, what kind of, not vendettas, but I can't think of the word. But he'd say if somebody high-tattled, somebody come and get you. So if you high-tattled somebody by accident, you were marked then. There was lots of fights.
Vindictive.
Which I never got involved in. Vindictive. Yeah, just a bit, yeah.
Well, like, I'm after you and I'm good. There's
a lot of retribution, yeah. Yeah, so women, yeah, they got, I think the women weren't quite as good as controlling their anger, all right. I remember high tackling somebody, and then she for the rest of the game, she came for me till Leslie, our captain, who was tiny, but made a steal, sorted her out, because I was a bit soft. There was no way I was going to start having her. But yeah, it was a bit, could get a bit hands on, literally.
Actually, do you know what? You're selling it to me.
It was great for getting the, you know what you mean, though?
Yeah,
I think everybody should give it a go.
And I think anything like that, which is tough, which is gritty, which is, the adrenaline. I mean, it's got to, you're obviously a really resilient person, and maybe something like that can help you as well in that way.
Yeah, because it toughens you up. You know, if you're getting battered and pushed around and tattled and flung around and the mud, you'd come out and you'd be like, just it be in your ears, up your nose, back of your teeth, because you'd have to remember to shut your mouth as you hit the deck, you know what I mean? And just, but I like, because of that physical, as sometimes I get frustrated as a female actor, that a lot of female roles don't have that real sport physicality sort of energy to them. That's why I think I like theatre more, because it's more physical. It's about the whole body, you know what I mean? And things, I get annoyed when you get a job and it's like, and, he pushes the woman against the wall and she sort of says, leave me alone. And I'm like, no.
You push him back, wouldn't you?
Oh, she just smacks him straight in the face. You know? There's a bit of aggression. But I'm like, I love that in women. It's like, because we're told not to, we're told to push our anger to one side. I'm like, embrace your anger. As Yoko Ono said, it's like a rising energy. It's like, use it. As long as you use it positively. And women should embrace their anger. Because I think we've got a lot of it, rightly. So,
So Max, talking about...
Sorry. Like she's gone.
We need to channel the energy, absolutely. talking about theatre, one of the most amazing plays I've been to was one that you wrote. And just to sort of paint the picture, Pav, your lovely long-term partner, gave you the autobiography of Beryl Burton. Yeah. And for anyone who doesn't know Beryl Burton, in 1967, she set the world record for 12 hours. She cycled 277 miles in 12 hours, beating the male's record the guy at the time, Mike McNamara, rode 276 miles and Beryl rode 277. Now, you didn't know anything about her and you read the autobiography and you would safely say yourself, you are a feminist, and you just went, hang on a minute, how come I don't know about this woman? And that's what led you on to write the radio play, and then it became theatre. It was absolutely brilliant, Maxine. Tell us more about that time.
Yeah, so Pav got me this book and he said, there's a little message in saying, get yourself a curly perm, because Beryl had this very tight sort of short curly hair. There's a part in this for you. And I went, God, this would make a brilliant film. But trying to get a film off the ground in this country is pretty hard, and trying to get funding, and especially at that time, about a woman, a female woman protagonist, and, not then having to hand it over to another actress with a bigger profile. So I sort of thought, what could I do? And I was doing a radio play at the time, and I mentioned it to Justine Potter, the producer and director. And I said, would you get someone to write this? I'd love to do it. And she said, you write it. And I went, oh, Pav said I can write, but I don't think I can. And then she said, well, if you don't write it, we're not going to do it. So I had to write it. I mean, she took me through the process brilliantly, you know, and sort of held my hand. So I wrote it for radio. We did it. And then Leeds Playhouse, as now is, James Brining got in touch and said, actually, we were going to, himself and a brilliant writer called Stephen Greenhorn, we're going to do something about Barrow, but we heard your play and went, we should just let you do it. So would you write it for stage? Because it was when the Grand Opa was in Leeds. So I went, oh, really? Oh, go on. I'll have a go at anything. That's my thing. I just think, have a go. What's the worst can happen? So I had to go. And I was so surprised because James Brining even said to me, this isn't really a play, is it? And I was like, no, it's a night out. I want people to have fun, celebrate Beryl and learn a bit more about cycling and its origins, but also about this amazing athlete that we should all know about, not just, you know, people in the cycling fraternity.
And that world record still hasn't been broken, Lou.
I thought her last one had been broken about 2 years ago.
Oh, well, it might have done then. But it might have done. But it took that long from 1967 until just a couple of years ago for that 12-hour record to be broken.
Yeah, Maxine, I didn't know until we were doing this podcast with you that you'd done a play about her, because like you, I went to Leeds. I think it was about when the Grand Opa was in Leeds, and somebody told me about Beryl. And I just, you know, she was absolutely staggering, ahead of the time, ahead of our time even, in so many ways. So just give us a bit more. So we know she did these world records, but she was so kind of like down to earth and, you know, in a sport which was 99.9% male dominated and just extraordinary, wasn't she?
Well, what happened was when Pavard sort of got me the book and I thought, oh, this is going to be about, so it's 50s, 60s when she was sort of, starting out, you know, when she was the height of a sort of success in the 60s, although she continued on into her 40s, you know. And I thought, this is going to be about a woman struggling with a husband who's, you know, telling her to get back in the kitchen. All those stereotypes I had in my head. And then I read this book and Beryl and her partner, Charlie Burton, and Charlie's still alive. And Charlie basically was introduced her to cycling, realised she had a talent and went, you go and do it. And he was like her soigneur. You know, he serviced a bike. He was a trainer. He was everything rolled into one and encouraged her. And actually at that time, from what I can gather, the whole male cycling fraternity, I could be mistaken, but it didn't feel, because they just respected her as this, spectacular athlete. She did it her own way. She picked rhubarb as a daily job with a guy called Nim Carlin, who used to train her as well. But for strength, you know, she was focused, but she was amateur. She didn't become professional because she didn't want to be told what to do or what races she could, you know, participate in. You know, we're talking steel frame bike. You know, all this amazing technology we've got now, diets, trainers, she still held that record till recently.
I want to put a call out there to anybody who listens to this podcast who's involved, like Maxine, in the film industry. Please make a film about it. It'll be such a good film. So what? Have you got one coming?
I did a film a couple of years ago called Keeping Rosie with these two fabulous guys, Steve Reeves and Mike Orton, and both are big cyclists. And a few people had said to me, what about doing a film? What about doing a TV series? And it was never quite right. And then the other day I just thought, right. So I got in touch with Mike because he's a brilliant writer and he loves cycling. And as well, because it's a collaboration, he's taken it from the play and he's on the second draft now, the script, since fab. So we're just now at this process of going round. But what we want to look at it as, obviously, I want to play Beryl, but
obviously
when she's,
you do.
But when she's older, and what happens to a woman and an athlete and a sports person when the body starts to fail them in the, you know, when it becomes, she's not the top of a game. I mean, she died when she was 59. She had a heart arrhythmia. She had, what's it called? Rheumatoid, St. Vitus dance with rheumatic fever when she was younger. So she was told never to do any
exercise,
you know, exercise or intense sport.
So did she, I think she died on her bike. Did she have a heart attack?
She did. She was delivering a birth. It was a 15. She was 15. I was a 58, 59. She was delivering invitations for her birthday. So she wasn't even competing. Oh. And she collapsed and somebody found her in the road. And it's such a a poetic ending in a way, a heartbreaking ending, but to this amazing life. It always makes me get quite emotional to think that that's how she went.
So Maxine, when's the film coming out? So you've got we're
looking now. I mean, I don't know. Sometimes do I get in trouble? I'm not supposed to say anything. But we're looking. We've got the script. We're now looking for, you know, production company. It's literally last week, because I've sat on it and sat on it and gone, should I write it? And then I know, and people have gone, I'm sure people say, why have you got two men? But no, actually, only men have ever approached me about making it. Women haven't approached me about it. And sometimes I go, sorry.
Can we put a bid in for me and Annie to be like extras?
Please. Wouldn't that be definitely amazing?
We'd have to, wouldn't we?
Yeah, and can you train me as well? Because I've just joined a cycling club, which I should have done years ago. I mean, at the age of 46, which I'm loving. But I wish, why didn't? I was too scared before. I thought, oh, it'll be really elitist and it'll be... And it's brilliant.
Who have you joined?
Well, I've joined Rafa in Manchester because a friend of mine's partner, his Les is called, and she said, oh, Les will take you out on a few rides. Les is in Rafa. And I thought, oh, isn't Rafa? It's quite swanky and they've got all that fancy gear.
They've got such nice gear.
They've got lovely gear.
There is other gear available.
But I joined, and it's been brilliant going out on the early morning ride, you know, meeting at 7:30, going, doing two or three hours, and then on a Saturday going out for 4 or 5 hours. I did the women's 100K, I've loved it. And it is that camaraderie, and, you know, and everyone's a lot, all the women are a lot younger than me, young women, and they're brilliant. They're just so supportive when I'm at the back going, don't worry about me, I'll be fine, you know. And everybody's like, no.
Excited for you. did you have a bike before? Did you cycle before?
I always had a bike. I've always got about on a bike. But an hour cycling for me was, I've done a good cycle. Now I realise that that's just a warm-up, you know. It's like, what was I thinking? Yeah.
You've answered lots of questions from people, because Michelle, who's our cycling lead, was asking how you got into cycling. So I suppose, your first bike was when you were young, was it then?
Yeah, I had I'd always had bikes. I remember my granddad taught me how it was my granddad Jim, who was amazing. He taught me how to ride a bike. And then I always had bikes. And then when I was I always remember when my mum and dad divorced, blackmailing my dad into buying me a BMX. So I loved my BMX because I wanted to be a bit of a tomboy. I was like a tomboy, but too soft. You know, I'd get up a tree and then couldn't get down it. You know what I mean? I was one of those. I'd start to cry and go, can somebody get me mum? So I just quite, yeah. But so I had a BMX and then I had a mountain bike, but I never had a racer till probably 10 years ago. But going into work, commuting when I'm at the theatre, but it was about freedom as a kid, because we, you know, single parent family, there wasn't a lot of money. If I wanted to go anywhere, it was get on your bike and you go. And it was, yeah, I loved it. I've always had a bike and just used it for getting around, but never for proper cycling.
So you mentioned, and I've got to bring him back up again, Granddad Jim, because I know so much about him. I feel like I do know him through Charlotte, who knew
well,
him.
Well, he loved Charlotte. Yeah. As everybody loves Charlotte, you know, it's amazing.
But I think what's lovely about you, Maxine, is you talked about living in London and you sort of were there for 13 years, but you've always gone back to your roots and you're very honest to who you are. And I think, you know, in this day, this world that we live in, I think it's such an amazing thing where people don't, you know, cling to their roots and stand for what they believe in. Now, I know that Chart said, and you've spoken about him before, but Granddad Jim was, you know, talk about Victoria Wood being influential in your life, but Jim was kind of off the scales in terms of a major influencer in your life.
Yeah, he was, because he's my step-granddad. My mum's dad died when she was 8 years old, and then my nan remarried Jim. Oh, when my mum was in it, it was a teen. But Jim was very political. He was in the Communist Party. But he was just that sense of, you know, and I know people go Communist Party and everybody goes, ooh, but he had a real sense. And everyone who's met him, you know, whether whatever the politics are, God, this man was about, it was about being a good person. It was about kindness, compassion. That's what was brought up. It was about being politically engaged. It was anti-fascist, anti-racist, anti-capitalist. You know, it was about, you know, he was a socialist, as they used to say in the Communist Party. A communist is a socialist who means it. But it was about, you know, the greater, it was, you know, that thing, the greater, but for the community, for, that's how I was brought up, that actually you're just, you know, you're just a cog in a big wheel, and you've got to work to make it work for everybody. You know, it was not about being, I remember when I said I want to be an actor, and he said to me, well, you'll never be an actor. And I went, why? He went, well, you're not self-centred enough, which actually he would probably say that now. He probably got, well, yeah, can see why you did become an actor. But he was, yeah, he didn't like ambition, competition. He was upset when I said I was being an actor, because he said, oh, it's quite an ambitious, you know, profession to be in. It's competitive. It's, but he had a huge influence, because it was always about thinking about others before you yourself, you know. Yeah.
And you live with him, didn't you? When your mum remarried, you went off to him to finish your GCSEs, and you actually spent quite a few years living with your step-granddad.
Yeah, I mean, I was 15, and I know, I think, had you and Charlotte sort of moved and got your own flat by then, but I went and lived with Matt. I was like 14, 15. My mum moved to Leyland with a new partner, and I just didn't want to go. So Jim said to me, you can come and stay with me till you get yourself organised. And then I was 21 when I moved out. And I loved it. It's like people say he was like your best friend, because he was a real mentor to me. I mean, he was self-educated, but he was so, he was so well-read. He was, you know, politically, you know, he just absorbed knowledge. You know, and for me, it was a real sounding board for where the world was, and you know, and I really miss, you know, I mean, yeah, sometimes I do miss his sort of guidance sometimes, and we wouldn't always agree on everything, and you know, but he was so up to date with what was going on, and so in, you know, everyone says no about that older generation, but it's a different generation. I mean, he would have been probably in his 90s, he would have been in his 90s now, but he was so conscious and concerned and compassionate about the younger generation and what they were coming into. He was so clued up, you know, you know, where I think now sometimes there seems to be a lot of talk about a generation, and I know people in that generation are not that at all. They are completely clued up and political and driven, and but you know, there seems to be a bit of a disconnect with what's happening.
And it's lovely hearing you talk about that, what's clearly a really special relationship. And maybe this goes back to, Marie's got a question for you, says, how do you stay so resilient in an industry that is so judgmental? I'm guessing he's got something to do with the resilience,
yeah,
but
yeah,
go on.
Yeah. I mean, fantastic friends and family. You know, my partner, Pav, keeps my feet on the ground. His support has been amazing. You know, and he goes through it sometimes when I've been in situations or criticism or whatever. I think he feels it sometimes more than I do, you know, because, he's brilliant. He's just supportive. He's so supportive. He understands it. He never tells me what I should and should not do, which, you know, I wouldn't listen to him anyway if he did, and I wouldn't be with him if he was like that. But, you know, but in a way that, and just having great friends, great female, and male friends, but predominantly brilliant female friends like Charlotte Emerson, you know, who you know have your back, who know you and love you and trust you. And that's all you need. It doesn't matter what anybody else thinks about you. As long as your friends know who you are, know you're a good person. To me, that's been a massive, you know, let everyone else get on with it, because they don't know you. Let them say what they want to say. You're never going to win them round, not in the climate we're at the moment. So I just, yeah, it's just surround yourself by good people. And if you know, and you have to be a good friend too, you know. So, yeah.
I think that is really, you know, wonderful advice. And I like when I've watched the relationship that you have with Charlotte over the years, and it is, you know, you can go quite a while without being in touch, but ultimately, as you said, you have one another's backs. And I think that's such a wonderful message to put out there to listeners, to say, you know, you don't need hundreds of friends. Don't care about what the things that people say that you can't change. Care about the people that really know you and really care about you. And I think in the environment that we live in. You know, that's a brilliant message for everyone, but particularly, you know, we know that predominantly our listeners are women. But I think a lot of people, and you'll agree with this, Lou, that we worry too much, don't we, about what other people think. And I think that stops you from progressing in your life in whatever you're doing.
Yeah, and then you've let them win because that's what people want. And I'm so shocked that other people really, that's their sort of, seems to be their aim in life is to block and stop and prevent people from moving forward. Or, you know, and it's about, let's have discussions, let's talk if you don't agree with me, you know. And I've got friends that politically I don't agree with at all, but we're still friends and we still love each other. We just don't talk about it. If we do, we might get a bit heated about it. But I don't want to be living in an echo chamber with all my friends, and especially my politics, because I'm quite left. There's not many people who I know is as left as I am. So, you know, if I didn't have friends I didn't agree with politically, I wouldn't have any friends, you know.
Oh, my God. So, oh, sorry about this. Hold on, this phone's going.
This phone's going.
Is it Lou's phone?
There's always something in your house, Lou.
It's the phone.
It's the dogs. It's Dave. It's one of her girls. It's the phone today. Talking about, you know, being a strong person, being a strong woman, I'd like to just touch on the radio play, Four Miners' Wives, that you wrote. You felt there was, you know, a lack of sort of women's, you know, interesting stuff going on there. And this play, you said it's about ordinary women doing extraordinary things.
Yeah. Which I think women are extraordinary. We are, I'm going to get accused of it, but we are an extraordinary species. You know what I mean? What we do and, you know, and we're not celebrated enough and we don't celebrate ourselves enough. But for me, it was these four women, led by Anne Scargill, who was then Arthur Scargill's wife, you know. And for me, the miners' strike was a big, you know, we were nearly on the brink of civil war. It was a huge, you know, a huge event in British political history. The miners took on Thatcher, you know, whatever. But for me, it was the women that were the backbone of that strike. The women stuck by the men. The women made huge sacrifices. They enabled, as a lot of women do, enable the men to be at the front, gaining all the glory, when really usually at the back there's a woman sort of doing, you know, supporting and sacrificing for that. And for me, this is what it was about. And Anne Scargill and these three other women had decided to occupy Parkside Colliery, which is just up the road near me, sort of going towards Lee and Wigan. I don't know, I'm pointing up there, but I know it's up there. And they'd had no plan. They just heard they were doing educational tours. So they went down pretending to be teachers. And then when they said, right, ladies, when they showed them around the pit, they went, get back in the cage that takes them down. And they said, no, we're occupying your pit. And they ran off. And they spent 5 days and four nights with nothing. It's freezing. It was freezing down there. I think they had a bottle of water and some chewing gum between them. You know what I mean? And they survived and they, you know, just, and I went to meet Anne Scargill. Because when I'd written Beryl, Justine said to me, what other stories have you got? I said, well, to be honest, I've had this story for years. I remember it happening. I went, I'd love to write about this. So she said, let's do it. So we got in touch with Anne. We went to meet Anne and I thought, oh, it's going to be quite upsetting, this and these women in the struggle. For 5 hours, we laughed and laughed and laughed. And I thought, this is what we don't see in drama, you know, TV, film, theatre. Is the camaraderie of women and the fact that laughter gets us through. It's the survival technique, the survival, you know, kicks in. And these, and Anne always says, well, if you didn't laugh, you'd cry. And it turned into be a comedy. And it was just, most of it was sort of verbatim. They told me what happened and I just, you know, wrote it and pieced it together into a structure. But they were hilarious. And this, and people said, oh, they must have fallen out. People wanted this big bust up, you know, four women down. And no, they had a great time. There's little, you know, little disagreements. But I think that's what people always think. If you get a group of women together, they'll all start scratching each other's eyes out in 5 minutes. That's the male point of view of
that's such a cliche, women. Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so I just got on this thing about going, finding female stories. There's, you know, millions of amazing women out there. That you think, gosh, if this was a man, who'd achieve what they'd achieved. We'd never hear the last of it.
Right, we're going to get... my challenge again is for everybody listening to send Maxine brilliant female stories so you can make them into fantastic theatre, etc. for us.
But why are we not doing more of it on telly and film? I keep sort of get frustrated and you get sent another script and it's, I shouldn't really sort of bite in the hand that feeds me, but just a slightly characterless woman who's in a situation. And I go, nobody writes, very few people write these amazing, rich, you know, female characters with a life who then something happens to them. It's about an event that a woman happens to be in who's just sort of an every woman. And I think, oh, it's really dull. And I don't know many women like that. In fact, I don't think I know any. You know, people say strong women. Well, I'm a bit like, what do you mean strong women? All women are strong. Of course, you pop out babies. I mean, I know I haven't, but, you know, all that, come on. You know, we have periods. Christ almighty. You know.
Gets worse when they've gone, I think. But anyway, that's my personal opinion.
I saw a T-shirt the other day and somebody says, I've done everything you've done, but at the, or something about, but at the same time as bleeding. I was like, yes.
Do you know what? It's the older generation. Sorry, Lou. The older generation is really hilarious. And I think the older generation of women... Oh, God, I was having a conversation with my mum the other day and I was telling her about a previous podcast we did with the brilliant Dr. Louisa Newson on menopause. And my mum said, oh, I don't know why we have to talk about that so much these days. And I just think you don't really help yourself, you know, when you, because actually if men had to go through menopause, could you imagine it?
Well, exactly. And can I just say this? And I've really always wanted to get this off my chest because I've never said it. But when I played Hamlet, people would go, oh, you know, woman of Hamlet, blah, blah, blah. And it's and men would go, it's quite physically difficult, isn't it? And I'd go, yeah, it was quite tiring. After, because I had horrendous periods. I'm going to talk about this because I was in a nappy, basically, playing Hamlet. I went to then go and see somebody about it afterwards. And when the surgeon took my blood, he said, oh my God. He said, I came to see Hamlet. I didn't know him previously. He said, how you stood up on that stage with the iron levels that you've got. But as women, we do it. But all these men are going, oh, I was really exhausted by the end of it. And one review said, oh, Maxine Peake's voice is quite weak. Maybe she's not got the strength. And you go, yeah, because I was having 10 days worth of periods with the amount
gosh.
Of... I really want to talk about it because I'm sort of like, you don't, because you go, oh, don't talk to people about running off stage as Hamlet and going, God, I need to chair. Oh my God, have I leaked everywhere? Oh my, so that's what we have to deal with on it. And it's never talked about. No. And it drives me mad that we have to, you know, we live with this.
Yeah. It's the fear of embarrassment, isn't it, as well? Do you sort of mean? I mean, that if for example, that had happened on stage, it would have been...
can you imagine the shame?
Yeah, your face says it all. Go on.
Well, the shame and people, you know, at one point I took my jacket off in a scene. I had those tenor lady pants on because I had every, you know, tampons, pads and a tenor lady pant in case I went. And at one point I went, I think I've gone through. I better tie my jacket round my waist. I don't think David Tennant or John Seymour... Rory Kinnear were on stage going, has my period leaked down my trouser leg for the Earl of Manchester to see? You know?
I mean, we're laughing about it, but it's not funny. I mean, how the hell you can focus on lines with that going on in your body? And actually, Maxine, don't apologise because this is absolutely the right platform. We talk about everything. We talk about everything on here.
But we need to talk about it more and go, you know what? Come on, it's hard if so many women have trouble with the endometriosis, fibroids, all sorts of, you know, and it's just not talked about.
Maxine, did you go and see someone?
Yeah, I did get sorted out in the end, but it was hard. You go and they go, oh, well, it's just your period. It's just, because I'd always had terrible periods from when I started.
Well, you should listen to the podcast with Louise Newson because she says that's not necessary, didn't she, Annie?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But nobody talks to you. Female doctors would say, well, you just have to, you know.
Get on with it.
And for
not
you,
all of them.
For you, Maxine, I mean, that was not that long ago. I know that was a few years ago, but an interesting, and that's, and have a listen to Dr. Newson, because she's absolutely brilliant. But interestingly, and this is relative to what you were saying about, you know, the reaction of doctors. So I was talking to a friend the other day and saying, oh, you've got to come and listen to this podcast that we've done. It's brilliant with Dr. Newson, because she'd gone to the doctors about horrific sort of menopausal symptoms. He told her to go Google it and decide what she wanted to do. And she left the surgery just in bits, crying. And in fact, he did ring and apologize later. But how on earth in this day and age has it come to that? Like, we're talking, you know, a few months ago, just before lockdown, that happened. The doctor sent her to go and look on Google and work out what she wanted to do.
It's horrendous. And it's how debilitating it is, you know, and just that, like I say, it's a secret. It's a guilty secret or a shameful secret we're not supposed to talk about. Absolutely. When are we going to, you know, when are we going to change this? When are we going to start just... That's why I think now I'm just going to start talking about it. I don't care who, you know.
I love talking to you, Maxine. You've always been like that, though. I mean, so many actors are so guarded with what they say.
Oh, who cares? I'm 46 now. I've done it, you know what I mean? But it's like... And if, I don't know. I think, it just needs to be... People need to talk about it a bit more, normalise it.
Maxine, you're probably not aware, but I did this whole thing on BBC Breakfast about menopause. And actually, once you start talking about things like that, my gosh, it can be, it wasn't just helpful for me, but just for, you know, just opening it up and people going, oh, okay, so that's normal or that's not normal or, you know, talking about it, you hear some truths which may resonate with you or not.
Well, people's got symptoms and think, oh, I think I'm losing my memory. I think I'm getting dementia. And then it's like, oh, it's menopause or this is happening. Why am I feeling like this? I feel terrible. What's wrong with me? Have I got something sick? You know, and you know, it is a, but it's, yeah, we need to talk about it. We need to start talking from as soon as people, women stop having periods till, you know, it needs to be a constant conversation and it needs to be out in the open.
We are going to ask you in a minute for your five top tips for your best life, for your best year yet. Before we do, can we just go back to cycling? Because I'm a bit like you. Annie is a brilliant cyclist and has cycled for years. I'm a bit like you. I think I took up cycling seriously about the same age that you did. And I think for people who are listening, or at least I found it was scary, you know, because I was a bit like you. I had a bike in London where I used to commute to work, a kind of little, you know, I don't know, like a hybrid bike or whatever, and then moved to road bike. And it was really scary and it was quite intimidating. So what's your advice for people who are thinking, oh, I think I might try a bit of that?
That's the thing, is just try it. Just go along. I think just join a club. I mean, do a bit of research. I mean, I did try joining a few clubs and nobody ever got back to me. And then, but it
How
was,
did they not get back to you, Maxine?
I don't know. Maybe they thought I was taking the mickey, you know, sort of emailing going, I'm really interested in you. But I think it's like anything. I've never done a bungee jump, but it's just that thing of going, I said to a friend the other day, I said, is anything ever worse than you imagine it to be? When you think, oh God, I don't really want to. Oh, I don't think I should. I'm a bit nervous about that. I said, have you ever done anything that you felt like that about that's been worse than the expectation? And it never is. But if it's not a decent club, you know, if they're not looking after you, then it's a terrible club. But it is, and it's joining, I go on the social rides. I look at some rides and go, under no circumstances. I mean, that will be something I'd aim towards. But I think just get out there, you know, and do it and get in with a group of people, because the encouragement, and it's riding in a group, isn't it, makes a difference.
Do your rides include cake?
Oh God, yeah. Oh, when I did the Women's 100, I made a foolish mistake of having a cheese and onion pasta halfway around.
Did not go well.
We were going up a big hill near Alderley Edge. I think it's called Artist Lane. And I got halfway up and I thought, I don't feel very well at all. I don't know. And Pav said to me, why did you have a cheese and onion pasta? I said, because I just thought I could. And the fact is, because you burn more calories than you can ever, even I can ever consume. And then I got to the top and then the ride leader gave me one of those like...
gels.
You know, sort of gels.
Yeah.
So I rode back to Manchester with cheese and onion pasta and a sugary gel. that wasn't. Ugh. So my advice is don't have a cheese and onion pasta, but coffee and cake on a more civilised. Oh, yeah, that's the only attraction to it. Yeah. I'm a bit like, where's the cafe stop?
That's where I'm at.
You've got to treat yourself.
Oh, my God. I love Maxine. You know, I found out something. I knew you rode a bike, but I thought you rode, you know, just poodled around on a town bike. So, you know, this is, for me, this is news that you are out there riding more than I am, yeah, by the sounds of it. Three, four hours at the weekend. I mean, that is, wow.
In full Lycra. And it's been able to wear Lycra, but you're moving that fast, nobody can really see.
Oh my gosh, I love you.
The weather today is absolutely horrific. Are you also a wet, you know, I'm a bit of you'll go out in the wet as well?
You've got to, well, yesterday, I mean, I only went out for a couple of hours yesterday. I just went over to see a friend.
I'm impressed.
So
impressed.
When you get back, you go and have a hot bath straight away. Have something to eat. I was getting, have a hot bath, and then I feel good. But it is that when your feet have gone numb and you're wet, sweat and then cold as well. It's like...
Yeah, no, I'm really impressed. I'm really not a wet weather cyclist. So hats off to you, Maxine.
So Max, what? Tell us your five top tips off the top of your head. So we're looking for inspirational women's top tips for your five top tips for your best year yet. So, I mean, you've come out with some brilliant stuff. And I think number one, actually, and I'll do the first one for you because you've already said it. And that is, you know, surround yourself with the people that know you. Take notice of those people and ignore the rest of them. And I think...
Exactly.
So that's one down.
Yeah.
What are your next four?
I think it is about just listen to yourself as well a lot of the time, isn't it? Listen to actually your own voice. What do you... You know, we're so bombarded, aren't we, with other people's sort of viewpoints and ideas and media. And it's really hard to cut through all that. So it is about trying to be true to yourself, whatever that is. And I'm not saying don't apologise, but don't apologise for who you are. I spent so long doing it, being so self-conscious, self-loathing. Oh, I'm not this, I'm not that. And now I just go, I am. I'm so loving being in my late 40s now, you know, sort of dressing like a mad bag lady and not caring that I walk down the street with a dog and some of the young lads at the end give me the filthiest look because they think I've got the maddest gear on. And I'm like, why would I care what you think about me? I love it.
I think that's at least three there.
Sorry. But yeah, it's just being kind to yourself because we're not very good at being kind to ourselves, are we?
No, we're terrible. And we do discuss that a lot on here, don't we, Lou, about, you know, the fact that, yeah, women, we judge ourselves, you know, far more than men. I don't know why we do that. You know, men don't go through the world. Some might do, yeah, but it's much more a woman's trait, isn't it, to go, oh, I'm getting old, I'm ugly, I'm not good at this. Oh, God, what do people think of me? Why did I say this? You know, and we talk about that a lot. And it's brilliant for you to hear. Can I just say you're not in your late 40s, you're 46, and I'm 50, and Lou's 52, so we're much older than you are.
And as well, and it's, I do this thing where I go, oh, well, I can't do this now because of this age. Forget about age. Yeah. It's embracing now. I think now it's... Not the confident. I don't feel I'm more confident now. I just think I care less now. And I think embrace that. Don't let that pass by. You know what I mean? Get out and do things like start cycling at 46. You know what I mean? Look at Louise. It's like my dad always says, is that the triathlete? The triathlete.
Oh, I love your term. Really?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Well, I tell you what, Maxine, come on. In the summer, I know they're trying to get a triathlon done at Media City. I work there. You live around the corner. Yeah,
because I kept thinking about, because when Annie was saying about, was it Iron Gran,
Eddie Brocklesby, yeah.
And I was going, oh, maybe I could start, because I started running. I never used to run. I mean, I only do half an hour, but I was going, I'm fitter now because I've actually just, well, I've had time, I suppose, because of lockdown.
Yeah. You know. Oh, so Maxine, can you swim?
Yeah, well, I used to be a lifeguard.
Oh, well, there you go. Goodness me.
with Paddy McGuinness at Horwich Leisure Centre, the star-studded swimming baths of Bolton.
Oh, I wish we could have, you know, that, I mean, that's just legend.
Right, Maxine, I'm going to get in touch because I know I've got some friends I know who are trying to set up a triathlon there. There's absolutely no excuse for you and me not to do it, and we'll do it together.
Yeah, but you're okay? Super fit. I mean,
I just do it for fun, okay?
Right.
Come on.
Right. Okay. I'm on for it.
And have you ever swum in the docks in Salford?
No, I always keep looking and going, oh, I'd love to do.
Right, okay, come on.
Right.
Next summer, when we're allowed to meet each other, when we're both in the same tier, I'll take you for a swim in the docks and we'll see if we can manage it. It'd be so
brilliant.
Nice. I'd love that. Love
brilliant.
That.
That's something to aim for now.
Isn't
brilliant.
It? Something to look forward to. We really need it, don't we? I love it. Exactly. Look forward to a swimming in the docks, Maxine. Oh gosh, it's been such a pleasure to talk to, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been amazing. No. It's just been absolutely adorable. What a brilliant guest to have on to celebrate our 30th podcast. Really has been.
Well,
amazing,
congratulations.
Thank you. And when are we next going to see you on the telly, or what are you doing next, Maxine? Have you got something planned at this point?
I've just come out from London, from Freedom to Tier 3. I've just come back from London doing the Talking Heads that I did on the BBC on stage. And then we're going to Leeds and Sheffield, not next week, the week after. Myself and Imelda Staunton are doing 3 nights in Leeds and 3 nights in Sheffield. So I'm doing that. And then I did a TV job 3 years ago, but Anne Williams, who was one of the Hillsborough campaigners, and she lost her son, Kevin. But because of all the legal issues, it's not been able to come out yet. So hopefully, it should have been coming out. When was it possibly coming out? April, but I think it's now. Again, the trials and trials are going on. So that's still got to come out. But yeah, sort of hopefully, fingers crossed, you know, we'll get somewhere with Beryl.
Yeah, Beryl the movie. That is going to be so exciting.
We're all waiting.
I think, you know, because the play did so well, because she's so popular and cycling is huge. People said, if you write a play about cycling or fishing, although I don't know, that'd be a challenge. You'll get a good audience because it's the, you know, it's the sort of biggest sort of hobbies in you know, in the country. So, and you know, there's bits and there's stuff, but it's just getting to that point of curating your career a bit more now and sort of going, what do I want to do? I don't know. I'm not saying, but you know, I'm generally a bit older, but yeah, it's just about doing things I really want to do, you know, and go, you know, being fortunate enough to be able to pick and choose, but you know, that won't last forever.
Oh, Maxine, thank you.
No, thank you so much, darling. We will we'll catch up with you soon, hopefully.
Let you go. Have some more cycling. What a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you.
Oh, you too. It's lovely to speak to you, Bob.
Oh, Annie, wow, what a lovely person to speak to. And I know you've known Maxine through your sister for years, but she's really down to earth, isn't she?
Oh, she's a really special person. I love her honesty. I love the way, you know, she's stuck very close to her roots. And I think in a world that sometimes, you know, can be, you know, very materialistic, I think she's a breath of fresh air. I really do. You know, she absolutely stands true to, you know, her political beliefs. You know, as a friend, I know from Charlotte, she just said she's just the most incredibly lovely, kind person, but also bloody interesting and wow, like so talented. And she plays it all down, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does. And I love that we didn't know about the cycling.
I know, completely.
It's a journey of discovery.
It really is. I had no idea. I thought she sort of potted around Manchester on a little push bike. You know, I had no idea she was out there doing more miles than we are. And I tell you what, she's a lot braver than we are. When was the last time you went out in the rain? I mean, if you get caught out in the rain, that's one thing. Do you ever leave the house in the rain? No way.
Never. Never.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's really impressive. So next week, we've got, fingers crossed, a brilliant guest, Bryony Gordon. I don't know if you who are listening know her. She writes really insightful stuff in The Telegraph, actually, mostly. She's a brilliant mental health campaigner, and she's just written a book, Annie, which I'm nearly at the end of, and really, honestly, is having a massive effect on my sleep because it's so good. I keep reading it in the bath and not going to bed until way after my bedtime. It's called Glorious Rock Bottom, and actually, it's not glorious, is it, Annie?
It's not glorious. And it's painful to listen to.
Because you're listening on audiobook, aren't you?
Yeah, brilliantly painful in, you know, sort of at times kind of slight agony. You know, it's just listening to her talk about what she went through.
And she's an alcoholic, and that's what the book is about.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, sort of keeping this incredible humour in the depth of, you know, the absolute worst time she could have ever been through and how she's pulled through that. And it's a remarkable story. And I'm very excited to chat with her.
Yeah, so fingers crossed she's on next week. Have a good week. I will not be cycling in the rain. Will you?
No, definitely not.
Good on Maxine and to all the rest of you who are much braver than us. Take care, Annie. See you soon.
Take care. Bye.
Hi, my name's Mel Berry and I'm one of the co-founders of Her Spirit. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. These podcasts would not have been made possible without the support of the brilliant MediChecks. MediChecks offer an easy and affordable way to check your health with their simple and personalized blood tests. From hormones and nutrition to cholesterol and diabetes, there is something for everyone. Just go to MediChecks.com to find out more. Have a great day.